I'm Georgia Pierre, and you're watching Black and Nuanced Podcast in HD. This is an extension, a visual extension of my podcast of the same name, where I seek to dispel the idea that all Black people are monolithic. And I have the homie, I call him Jordan, but his name is Jordan Crafton. Hi, Jordan.
What's up? How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for making the time, Mr. Busy filmmaker, musician, artist, multi-millionaire.
Hilarious.
All of the things. Okay, so Jordan, I got to tell them how we met. Do you remember how we met? Because I remember how we met.
I don't know. I feel pressured now. I don't know.
So I met you a few years ago when I used to work at VH1, and we had some type of drinking party going on our floor, and you came down. I was just like, oh, okay, there's a Black person. Like, you know, we didn't see too many of those where mm-hmm. we were. And I ended up going to Nickelodeon, like maybe a couple of years later, and ran into you on the floor. I was like, Jordan? And then I would not leave your office alone, your beanbags alone, all of the things alone. And so here we are.
Yeah, there we are. I forgot about that party.
Did you?
I do like free office alcohol. So. You can find me there anytime.
Anytime. And so would you consider yourself, because I know you're a musician and artist and you're also a filmmaker, would you consider yourself a musician first or a filmmaker first or kind of, you know?
Filmmaker. I'm not a musician anymore. I just, you know, in order to get certain titles,
okay.
you have to still be exercising that gift and practicing, okay. you know? So I don't consider myself that anymore. I mean, okay. I did it for a long time, but, just filmmaker, storyteller, you know, those are, and then every now and again, I'll hop in and, you know, play some music and stuff, but.
Right.
That's it, yeah.
What instrument do you know how to play? Because I would see you playing the piano.
Yeah, piano and the saxophone.
Okay. I love it. Shout out to your homie. He goes by Saxonist on Instagram.
Right. Nigel. Yeah. Now he's a real musician. He practices every day. He's performed all over the world. I mean, he's the real deal.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Shout out to him. Wait, so remember how you would always joke me about Georgette After Dark being an incomplete project and you would ask when it was coming out? What about your album? Are you still working on that?
My album is done. It's just I've run through some hiccups in order to release it. So that's been the problem. It's actually kind of heartbreaking. Thanks for bringing it up.
Triggered. So much triggered.
I finished it like 2 years ago. And I ran through it. Hopefully this fall.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Is it going to be jazz? What is it going to be a mixture of? What can we expect when it does come?
It's a little of everything. You know, it's a mixture. There's some jazz on there. There's some hip hop on there. There's stories on there. It's a little of everything.
Yeah. I remember hearing you played me some snippets, right, in your old office of the stories and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm not like you. You know, I keep you during the process. I let you see things. You know, you, on the other hand, it'd be crazy. I got to wait. It's like you and Dr. Dre's album. I don't know which was going to drop first.
Wait, I would like you to at least credit me for sending you the first three episodes that I filmed back in 2017. And my editor is finishing the last four that I filmed the end of last year. So I have seven episodes.
Okay, I'll give you that. You're 2.5 years late, but
I am. That's fair. I received that. We relinked up again working at Nickelodeon. I don't work there anymore. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, I know that.
Okay.
I don't work there either. Well, I'd actually never worked there.
Right. I mean, you were an extension of Nick right? Mm-hmm. And so, but the difference between like me, like I was connected to the network and obviously got caught up in the shuffle, the COVID-19 shuffle, but you're still with Nick. How did you get to Nick? Like, how did you end up working for him and with him as his DP and all of the things?
You know, long story short, he had a competition on his website in 2013
mm-hmm.
for 2012 for Artist of the Year. Artist of the Month. I submitted my work. I was chosen. I thought that meant that, you know, it was all good. It wasn't. He actually had no clue who I was, you know, because there was a whole other team running his website. So I set out to just meet him, and I went through a whole bunch of people trying to get through them. It took about 8 months. I finally met him And we met backstage at America's Got Talent. And then that's how the whole Nickelodeon thing started, because he was starting a, he wanted to start making a show called the Teen Nick Top 10.
I remember that.
Right. And he wanted to know if I could help out, because his team was already working on it. And the funny thing is, they got too busy. So he asked me if I could just take it on myself. And I said, sure. And then once that got picked up by the network, then everything one by one led to another. And then that's how, now here we are 8 years later.
I can't believe it's been 8 years. I mean, I actually didn't realize. I mean, like, I know you would tell some of the stories on Instagram and you just kind of express your gratitude every now and then on like milestones, like whether it was his birthday or the anniversary of something. And when people meet you, like you've been ingratiated into working with him for so long, but people, it's so interesting to hear like how you actually even got to him and the lengths that you went through to get to him. And now like you are his fucking right hand man.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
it was intense. Like people, you know, a lot of people, they say to me, they're like, oh man, you're so lucky, Jay. Be like, you wouldn't have done, a lot of people wouldn't have done even a quarter of the things I did. I mean, we're talking about outstanding outside radio stations, my cousin and I, for hours and hours, just to never even see him or his management, you know, tweeting him every day, tweeting his assistant, you know, emailing his agency, his manager at that time. You know, I mean, it was just, it was an everyday, I'm just trying to get a chance, pursuit to him. And like I said, it took 8 months, and a lot of people wouldn't be willing to do that, you know? So, but I felt compelled to do it, and I felt spiritually led to do it. So that's where I was committed, and look, and here we are now.
Right. 5 closets, 3 cars. Let me stop.
Wow. That's funny.
You should have seen that one coming, Jordan. You know, that's the reason why I call you Jordan, that's is funny. Because like you gotta put a little oomph on your name.
That's just a little funny. I do like to enjoy myself. That's funny though.
You know, I think you know, I would see him coming in and out of the building, and I actually met him when I had a short stint in Miami when he came down and did a live with the radio station I used to work for. And you know, a lot of people kind of joke and make their comments about him, but like your one-on-one experience, what is something that we don't get to see that is like the core of him?
You know what many people don't realize, and you could even attest to this, he's really a regular guy.
Yeah.
You know, and people expect him to be a certain way. They expect him to be a certain way. They expect him to be ridiculously bougie. They respect him. And he's really not like that. You know, he has everything, but his favorite things to do, his favorite places to go is just like the rest of us. His favorite mm-hmm. things to talk about, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's, that's really it. He's just a regular guy. It's like, so whenever you get to meet him or when we be on Howard's campus or whatever, it's nothing. You know, some people will come to me first and they'll be like, well, you think I could talk to Nick? I'd be like, you'd be surprised. Just go to him. He'll have an entire conversation with you, give you game, give you his email address. Like, he's really an open guy.
Oh, I love that. Oh, he giving out emails? Okay, Nick.
Yeah.
I would have asked him when I saw him. Let me stop.
Hilarious. Yeah, if you got a question or anything or you want to pitch him something, he'd be like, let's go. Dial in.
Oh, I love that. Well, you... Cough, cough. You know I'm a free agent. So if y'all need help with some stuff,
I got Dan, you.
I'm being dead ass though. So we can offline about that. But no, seriously, I actually feel really good. Like I want to lean more into doing more impactful work. And so I feel like you have been able to touch a lot of things and you're working on some things as well. What are some impactful things, or I guess one of the most impactful things that you got to work on with him because of him, you know?
I mean, that's easy. The Dr. Sabi documentary is, you know, the most impactful, the most anticipated thing that the audience and the people have been waiting on, you know, and they want to actually see, you know, in terms of projects that I've done with him that have changed my life. I mean, so many. I mean, the fact that I've even been able to get into television is because of him, you know, so I owe a lot, you know, to a Black man that looked for younger Black men to help them chase their dreams and get to the next level. You know, we could say a lot of things about a lot of Black leaders, but Nick is the type that actually set out to raise up younger people that look like him. You know, so that's impactful enough. But in terms of the work, yeah, it's that Dr. Sabi documentary. And, we're taking our time to make sure that we really do it right and shake right. the room.
No, it's funny because you and I, this man's last name is pronounced three different ways. Like, what is the correct way to pronounce? Because I heard Sebi, Sabi, Sebi. Which one is correct?
It's really Dr. Sabi.
Okay.
And in my opinion, unfortunately, he has transitioned.
Right.
So he's not here to tell us, but in the videos and stuff that I have seen from him, you know, talking about himself, he says Sabi.
Okay.
But a lot of people say Sebi, you know, like, or CB, you know.
Right.
It's a lot, you know, yeah. but one thing that he's clear on, it's everything he teaches is bigger than him. So you can call him whatever you want to, as long as you hear the message.
Right. I you and I offline about it, but I had one of my guy friends that told me about Dr. Sabi back in 2011 when I had moved to New York in 2010, and I was trying to do some holistic healing, and I had met one of his children.
I remember.
In LA. And so, he definitely changed my thought process on a lot of different things. Like, whether I agree on some of the things that I experienced personally, like, that remains to be seen. But the eating habits had changed immediately after I had talked to his daughter and all these other things. My eating habit has been trash during Rona. That's fine. I'm gonna work on that. But the shit is trash, but it is what it is. But yeah, I think he, I think what's going to be interesting when this document comes out, like, I feel like there's been, like I said, and we've talked about this, there's been mixed reviews about some of the beliefs that people believe, like, at least when it relates to some of the things that he's done and has said and all the other stuff. But I think either way, I think it's introducing him to an audience that has not, may have heard things and want to learn more things. And so you've been shooting and you're editing it. So you've shot things, like, you're behind, you're the shooter editor behind this documentary coming out.
Yep. And it's been quite the journey. I mean, I can't even tell you how many hours of footage we have.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're talking somewhere north of like 60 interviews. It's a lot, you know, but what I appreciate about it is, even at this point in my career, because I've done a bunch of documentaries before, but I feel like my talent level is actually prepared to do this now. Like, I couldn't have done this years prior, you know, just because the large undertaking and the tone of it needs to be very specific, and we need to hold true to it. Because the goal is, we're not trying to make anybody, you know, we're not trying to force anybody to believe anything or whatever. All we're trying to do is make people curious and encourage people to learn about what he was saying, the things he believed in, the things that's helping people all over the world and for the past, you know, few decades at least, you know, and that's really the goal, you know, and that's the thing, even just for the Black community, we just need to have more conversations, period. So this is what one of those things, and that's why I love documentaries, because it just opens the room for everyone to actually talk to each other about meaningful things.
Mm-hmm. Outside of Nick, as far as for you, what is your penultimate goal? Like, you are building this career path of being a DP. For those that don't know, it's director of photography, cinematography, or cinematographer. Like, what is your penultimate goal?
I would love to be. My goal is, I want to be one of the greatest storytellers of all time. But I'm not worried about a financial amount. I'm not trying to be, I'm not trying to be rich in money. I'm not trying to be rich in money, but I am trying to be abundant in resources, you know, and that's what's very important to me. So that way, for the rest of my life, I can be free and always create, you know, and then that will allow me to be, if one season of my life, I want to step back into, maybe I want to score some things and you know, and exercise those musical roots. If I want to go here and I just want to shoot some things, I want to edit some things, that's what I just want to be able to do for the rest of my life and be able to pick and choose. Because you know how the artists, sometimes we go into survival mode and we have to do projects that we don't even care about, you know? So I've been fortunate where the things, at least, that have involved my creative DNA, I've actually cared about them. So I just want to continue that path.
Oh, I'm inspired. Oh, Jordan. See, that's why I call you Jordan. See that little I love that. So are there any current projects, personal projects that you're working on, or has everything kind of been what you're working on with him?
No. I'm always keeping myself on keep myself open on the side. You know, I keep very strict hours for Nick, and then I keep strict hours for myself too.
I love that.
So especially in the past, you know, couple months, you know, especially during Rona, it's like a short series of just stories throughout my life that I've been trying to tell in a unique way. They're called bedtime stories.
Perfect transition, because I was going to ask you about some things, because I had so many questions. Are these real stories, Jordan?
Yes. Yeah, they are.
Okay.
Crazy.
Yeah, because I want to hone in. So you have 8 episodes up. I'm calling them episodes, but they're short clips or quick bites before Quibi came out. And you basically take the Memoji of yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you place it on the bodies of various videos, and then you're doing like the voiceover of like telling the story. The two that stuck out to me was episode 7, the police versus right. the black man. Mm-hmm. And I think in your caption, you were basically saying like, and I want to emphasize that you personally don't have any problems with interracial couples or people dating, but you had a personal experience where you were just like, I think I am good. And this is not going to be, I just want to know some background. And then what happened to your friend?
Okay, so first of all, I was 17. I had just went to the University of South Carolina. I didn't have a lot of friends. And within the first month I was there, one of my friends, he was dating a white girl, and he was a black man. And he said, yo, Jay, you want to come out? You know, her and her friend are coming. Just come hang out with us. So I said, you know, I was very skeptical at first. It's just because of the way that I grew up. You know, my neighborhood in Long Island was all black and Spanish. My interaction with people of different colors outside of that was non-existent. So only thing I had was, you know, civil rights movies in my reference and in my rear view. So I was nervous just for that, just because I didn't know what to expect. And then I knew everything that everyone told me about the South, period, about how I should feel, how I have to be extra careful who I'm around and this and that. So I'm like, okay, cool. I decide to go. You know, you saw what happened. We got pulled over by the police. We wasn't even in the car for 5 minutes. You know, we made a left turn in front of the student cafeteria, and we got pulled over. And because it was my friend and I in the back seat and the two white girls in the front seat, and they pulled us out of the car and they beat both of us up. You know, again, on campus, in front of the cafeteria. And this was my first interaction with, you know, that was my first experience, all of that. That was my first run-in with the police. That's my first everything. So what happened after that is, after they were done giving us the business, they just got in their car and they drove away. And then we got back in the car and we were just kind of silent for a while. Of course, the girls were emotional. Are you guys okay? You know, my friend, he grew up in the South. He kind of knew how to deal with this, you know, unfortunately. And he was just like, yo, just drive. You know, he just wanted to continue the night. I was in such shock that I didn't really know what to do with it. You know, so the next day I started telling some other friends that I knew, you know, and they didn't believe me. They was like, no, that would never happen, blah, 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 especially not on campus. You're lying. So I kept it to myself and I said nothing for a couple of years, you know, and that was the biggest mistake, because I never really got to talk about my energy. I never get to talk about those feelings. And then to this day, like if I'm out and about and a white girl even flirts with me, I get scared, you know, and it's nothing against them. You know, I love everything about it. It's just, for some reason, it's not for some reason. It's just because I didn't do anything with those feelings. You know, I didn't talk to nobody. No one helped me through it. And everyone told me I was lying. So it just affected me that way. And it sucks, because love is, you know, I'm such a big person on love that, like, I'm not even open to a certain part of it, just because, again, I didn't know how to handle it. You know, I didn't know how to handle someone else's poor decisions made upon me off of me just being me and my friends just going to hang out. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's what was tough about it.
Oh my God. Well, it was triggering because everything that's going on with Ahmaud Arbery, the young black man that was basically murdered for jogging in the neighborhood in Georgia, right? But it came out 2 months later because of the video. And so the funny thing is, like, your stories, the bedtime stories are they seem lighthearted, but just to even hear that, like, there's like real stories behind it. Cause I literally, by the time I got to episode 7, I was like, wait a minute. Yeah. Is this a real, it's like, is Jordan telling real stories? Yes. And I remember you were saying like, this is real, but the way you tell it, it was very digestible. And, but that one definitely stood out to me because I was like, okay, Jordan.
Yeah, you know, and it's, for me, even as an artist, I am very focused on having a diverse catalog.
Yeah.
You know, it's very easy for people to put you in a box. It's very easy for you to, you know, be looked at to have a certain style and can't even grow or anything like that. I don't want that. You know, I want to continuously grow. I'm a student, you know, and fortunately for me, like, even I know my brother, he sees all of them. And the first thing he always asks me is like, how did all this stuff happen to you? You know, because I'm ranging stories from when I was in the third grade to things that happened to me last year. You know, so we're going through 25 years of just my history, you know, and putting it in a way, like you said, digestible, because I know how the audience needs to receive certain things certain ways, you know, and they don't want to feel attacked. Even though I'm going to tell you a real story about me getting beat up by the police, I don't want you to feel like I'm attacking my views on you, you know, my history on you. I just want you to be able to just hear me and you can do whatever you want with it from there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but they're fun. they, you know, ratchet, then they're real.
Clearly. I was just like, wait, did Nick really give him some money to go to a strip club and then the BBW episode?
He did. And he changed my life. You know, he did. I'll never forget when I first threw out that first batch of money he gave me. And then, you know, I threw it out so fast that I didn't know what to do. And we still had time to be there. And his road manager tapped Nick and was like, yo, bro, young Jordan's out of bread. And then Nick was like, don't even worry about that little homie. Gave me some more money. I'm like, all right, here we go. Part two. You know, so. and
I can't. I actually laughed at the BBW episode because I remember when we were in the office. I think, shout out to Aja. We were like, it was late night. We were all working. And you were talking about how your first experience, like a big girl picked you up. And I was just like, oh, I remember this.
Yeah, she did. She tried to have her way with me. She tried to have a way with me.
You know? Jordan, I can't take you. I can't handle it. Where do you see these bedtime stories going? Are you doing more? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, you know, I want them to go. I mean, I feel like I could do these for the rest of my life. I'll be very honest with you. And I'm opening it up where, you know, like with that last episode about the BBW, I'm saying, you know, guys, send me some stories, you know, and I would love for people to tell me what they went through. And then I get to put my twist on it. And then now, again, that's another way to just stretch out these creative legs and to see how far I can get with this style. So that's okay. What I would love to do. You know, I already got a few stories in. They're crazy. They are crazy. And like one of them came in yesterday. And as she's sending me the voice notes, this young woman, I'm just typing back to her, wait, slow down. Slow, please. Look, this is amazing. You know, and these are things that happen in Brooklyn over the summertime. I can't wait to put the pen in the pad to it, you know, so that's what's exciting about it. So it's just about to be a community of us just telling each other what we went through, how we feel. And I still got plenty of my own that I want to tell, you know, so yeah, I can't wait. I love
that. If you ever need any voiceover, I always like to pitch myself, you know.
Well, I know you got the voice.
Okay, so I want to get to this last segment called All of the Things, similar to my podcast. If your movie was a soundtrack, what would 3 to 5 songs be, any genre?
Ooh, easy. 3 to 5. Okay, number one, In a Sentimental Mood by Coltrane and Duke Ellington. One of my favorite songs.
Yes.
Another one, it is a cover of Over the Rainbow by Kirk Whalum. So those are both two jazz pieces.
Okay.
And then the third song.
Give me 5 because I feel like you got more.
5.
I was feeling like a Soca or Calypso ting would be in there. You know how I was like, oh, respect that he loves the Caribbean culture.
Yeah, you know, I think I probably have to throw Fast Wine in there from Michelle. That's probably one of my favorite Soca tunes. Let's see. I said Over the Rainbow. I said In Summer Mood.
If those are your three, we could rock with that.
That might be my three right there.
Okay.
Because there's a couple other jazz songs that I know of, but I mean, Autumn Leaves is my favorite jazz song of all time, period. Mm-hmm. So that would be in there. And that version would be between Cannonball Adderley and Miles Davis. So it's so crazy. Especially as wild and as ratchet as you know me to be, this is actually, my core is literally just jazz tunes.
No, I know.
You know, so, but I do love me, you know, a good foolish song. You know, I do love me some good quality foolishness. You know, like my favorite song right now. Dang, what's the name of it? I got to look it up real quick.
Yes. No, but you know, I think that's what there's this, and I joke you and all this other stuff, but I think there's this energy that's easy to be attracted to your being because like you're really cool, chill vibes. And then your flex is something different, right? And when I mean flex, like how you dress and like just this whole, I don't want to use the word swagger, but like you're so chill. So you'll go from jazz to, you said, to a foolish song, like to Calypso to something else. And it's just like, who is this guy?
Yeah, I'm a weirdo. And no, that's probably... No, but that's my favorite thing to do. You know what I mean? Because think about it. If you're not weird, then you're either average or you're just not seen at all. So, and we think about Rich Dad, Poor Dad. We think about the rat race. I'd rather everyone else be sitting in traffic every day and I'll just ride up and down this lane with the other weirdos, which is very open. Because there's only a few of us who are actually excited to just be off like this.
Yeah.
You know, and it leaves us open. You know, I don't really care. You know, it's like, if you tell me something's cool over here, I'm going to go see it. You know, and I'm ratchet enough to stay there long enough to see what it comes out to be. You know, so, you know, and as I've learned, as I've grown, it's been easier for me to like just accept everybody for who they are. So that's the fun part.
Well, but that's actually truly you. Like, you don't say it. Like, I've witnessed it. I've mm-hmm. seen it at its core. So, Jordan, thank you so much. How can they find you and follow your flex and your fly?
Follow my flex and my fly. Instagram. I'm most only on there. You know, I am JD Crafton. I'm on there just showing a good time and being a fool. I'm the karaoke champ. I'm Young Papi Fuego.
Oh my God!
You know, I'm a little bit of everything, you know. So you get the whole vibe on there.
I cannot, Jordan. I appreciate you so much. Make sure you stay safe in your quarantine. And when the world opens back up, I still owe you a wine. And
listen. And the people want to see. They heard. They heard about your roots, and they want to see what they do. They told me, I got emails every day, like, yo, George, just be fronting.
He is like, nasty. Please do not.
Don't worry. It's coming soon. She's back. You know, the roti is on the way. Everything is coming soon.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, you're so funny. Jordan, mwah, thank you so much, sweetie.
My pleasure. Thank
you. Have a good one. And I want to see, if I can, Nick, I hope you don't mind, a rough draft. When before y'all release it, I would love to be one of the first few people that see it, if that's cool.
Well, you know, you're cool enough. Every premiere and screening and listening party I ever went to, you were there before me. So I don't know how you would be like, well, Jordan, can I please?
Listen, this is not mine. And, you know,
You're actually the plug. You gasoline me, but you're actually legitimately the plug.
I received that, but like... humble brag, like, nah, I think it's you, but it's cool. All right, sweetie. Well, I will talk to you later.
All right, you take care.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.